Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation,
partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, this is Imran Ahmed, founder and CEO of The Business of Fashion. Welcome to the BOF podcast. It's Friday, March 22nd. As performance coach to England's national football team, the Royal Ballet, and many more winning teams, Owen Eastwood taps into his Maori heritage to help groups foster a sense of togetherness and to drive high performance. I first learned of Owen's work from Tim Brown, the co-founder and chief innovation officer of Allbirds, a company which has been on a roller coaster of ups and downs since it went public in 2021. Last year, at BOF Voices 2023, Tim and Owen joined us to examine Owen's powerful approach to creating high-performance teams.
When we want to create a high-performing environment, we make an undertaking to each other that we will do nothing to diminish the dignity of every person. And when we all leave this experience or whatever it is together, our dignity will be enhanced. For me, therefore, you need to understand the story of the people you work with.
Here are Owen Eastwood and Tim Brown on the BOF podcast.
I'm so excited and honoured to be on the stage with you. To set the scene, here is what I see. An increasing sense of anxiety in a complicated world, global complex, sustainability, the environment, increasing disconnection within organisations and the communities that we're a part of, and against a backdrop of a transformational, technologically driven shift in the way that we're working and creating and collaborating. And I don't think it's ever been clearer, at least to me, that cultivating a sense of belonging and connection for our people in the organisations that we're a part of is important, and possibly less clear as to exactly how we do that. And this equally is happening at a time in the age of the chief culture officer, no disrespect, it's a fantastic advancement, with New York Times bestsellers defining the code of culture. And yet here you come along with no traditional training or background in the space, a reformed lawyer who has come into work with the best teams and organisations in the world and take the England football team, shift their fortunes, not just on the field, but in the way that they carry themselves, for anyone who's watched the post-match interview with Gareth Southgate's team. What is your story? What has been your pathway into this conversation?
Well, I think partly because I'm not qualified to do the work. I have to simplify everything for myself, first of all, but I think leaders find that quite attractive when you're able to simplify it. I think one of the great unsaid things about a high-performing environment is that, and I'm actually including us here together today, is that when everybody walks in that door, they come with a dignity. And when we want to create a high-performing environment, we make an undertaking to each other that we will do nothing to diminish the dignity of every person. And when we all leave this experience or whatever it is together, our dignity will be enhanced. And for me, therefore, you need to understand the story of the people you work with. So for me, I can only really explain my approach to this by telling you a little bit about my story, because otherwise my work or my creativity doesn't make any sense. And really, my whole philosophy of coaching came from, you know, the fact when I was 5, my father passed away very suddenly. And that left my mother, who was 39, with a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 5-year-old me, and my sister, who was 3. And my father was an only child, and he was half English and half Maori, the indigenous people of New Zealand. And when I grew up as a teenager, I felt quite lost, and there's a big hole there, not just my father, but something. I felt like I should be part English and part Maori, but I didn't feel those things. So when I was 12 years old, I wrote a letter to my Maori tribe, and I just asked them, I said, my father was Harry Eastwood, my grandmother Rose Eastwood, do you know who I am? And they wrote a very beautiful letter back to me, which said, we know who you are and you belong here. But what they really did significantly, and this reverberates through a lot of the talks today, is that they explained this very, very ancient idea called Waka Papa. And what they said to me is that you belong with us, but you need to understand your place in the world. And they said, whatever community you're part of, from a family to a team to a nation to GAP, whatever community you belong to, you are one person in a line of people. And that line started with our origin story. And all the people that have followed the origin story have their arms locked together. But it goes beyond you to the end of time. And the metaphor they used to me as a 12-year-old, which was very powerful, was that the sun first shone on our origin story, and it just slowly moves down this line of people, and it reveals each of us in turn. So if we're working for a team now, if we're leading GAP now, this that recent example, what's happened is that the sun has moved on to us, and that means that you write the next chapter of the story. And what they taught me was that you have to accept when the sun's shining on you, you're a guardian for what the things that came before you. But that's not a fairy tale. There will be certain things which need mending or maybe left behind, and you have to be brave and make calls like that. And then you have to meet the moment with the sun shining on you and write that next chapter of the story, and you have full empowerment to do that. And then finally, every single thing you do has to sow the conditions for those who follow you to be successful. So that was a very beautiful, simple spiritual idea that was given to me as a 12-year-old, and that's completely shaped how I approach building high-performing teams.
So you come into these elite organisations, in some cases take the England football team with hundreds of years of history. Talk to me about your process. And I think one of the things that I've learned so much from you is I think as leaders we use a word like culture all the time. And we say that we care about people, and we know that that's true, but what exactly does it mean? And how do we actually weave that into the day-to-day approach with which we lead the organisation? Tell me about what you do when you come into these organisations, and maybe the story of us is the starting point for that.
When I first became a performance coach, I was doing something with Manchester City, and they had a private meeting with a few selected people to come in and talk about culture. And what I learned in that meeting should have been taught to everybody when we go to school. They shared an insight that 70% of human behaviour is determined by whatever environment you are in at that moment. Why are we not taught that at school? Why do we not understand that? And so, therefore, we are incredibly malleable and profoundly affected by whatever environment we're in. When I came in here this morning, actually, although I'd not met the crew, the first three people I met, I said, hi, Owen. I mean, smiled at me. That changed my hormonal state. I could have easily came in here and relaxed me and gave me a bit of confidence. I could have easily come in here where it was a very different transactional type of feel, where people are very anxious and stressed and whatever. And I would have picked up on that, and my hormonal state would have had rising cortisol levels. So the very starting point of how we think about culture is, to me, it's not words up here. It is simply what is the physical environment we are in at any moment in time, and what is our hormonal reaction to it. And when I started working with England football team, there were individuals who were terrified by what they were doing. So, you know, with the Ryder Cup team, people like Rory McIlroy and John Rahm, England football, Harry Kane, we can't just tell them what to do. We first of all have to create a story for them to connect to. This is a story of who we are. This is our purpose. This is where we come from. And this is a chapter of the story that we could write, which will be one of the best experiences of our life and will be ultimately our legacy before we pass the shirt on. And I've not met an athlete who doesn't love that. And I think that's something that sometimes gets a bit neglected. We do a lot of external marketing. We're brilliant at telling the whole world what our story is, but maybe actually our authentic internal story is undersold. So that's where we start. We want them to be connected to something bigger than themselves, and they want to go there. But if we don't do it, they will default to being pretty selfish and individualistic.
one of the big takeaways I've had from our conversations and reflections, and at Allbirds, we started out strong. With six people, we defined an environmental mission, deep connection to our purpose. As Richard said, purpose is immortal. And yet, as we grew from 6 to 1,000 people over, give or take, 6 or 7 years, I don't want to say we stopped caring, but I think we put that particular piece of our storytelling on the shelf. And one of the big things that I've taken from you is that as a creative person, as a storyteller, are we doing enough within our organisations to tell stories internally in the same way that we're telling them outside of the organisation? We spent a lot of time on the fall runway show, and we spent a lot of time on the holiday campaign, but this need to constantly refresh the internal storytelling of our story of us and of our purpose was something that felt so obvious to me, and yet something that at Allbirds we certainly stopped doing through a number of years. Mm. Tell me about, practically speaking, the role of content and creativity to bring that story to life.
Well, you're my friend, Tim, and I've kicked you in the butt a few times about this because we met before Allbirds really was a thing. And we would sit down like this in a pub in London and you would tell me your dream and the story, and you sold me straight away. It was pure. It was sounded cool as well. Being connected to you made me feel a bit like a better person and your products. So that story was powerful. I'm not from the fashion industry, but I wanted to be part of what you were doing. And then we project forward, I don't know, 8 years down the line, you got 1,000 people, and I do. I've kicked you in the butt, haven't I? I've said that you've bureaucratized your culture. It used to be you could just tell me right now and tell all of us the soulfulness of what you are about and what you want to do and what's important. And literally yesterday I read a document of 38 pages from, you know, your head of HR, and I didn't actually understand exactly what it said. So, but this is actually a pattern, is that these startups, you know, there's a good analogy of like teenagers. Like, we've got so much energy, we don't want to sleep, we want to take risks, it's unbelievable, it's so powerful, you just want to be part of it. But then we start to break even and make a profit. And then we start to feel like we've got to grow up a little bit, don't we? We've got to be mature. We better be sensible and have some business processes, and we better get that expense, you know, process sorted out. And we better have an HR process, and we better have appraisals, and we better do this, we better do that. All of a sudden, the soulfulness has gone out of it. Mm-hmm. It's a common pattern. There's research on it. It shows that 90% of those startups die for that reason. So, you know, I plead with you and anyone else. You've got a beautiful story, my friend, and you've got to keep it alive. Not only when people come into the building on their first day, you've got to create rituals and traditions where it's reiterated. Because actually, it's not just for the benefit of new joiners, it's for the benefit of us who've been here a long time. We want to hear the story again. We literally have this fire pit we want to feel the warmth of. And that's what will energize us. So, as you've seen, we create some really beautiful films for some of our teams just about who the hell we are, why we're different, and what makes us special.
I'm very lucky to have you as a friend. There's just the power of creating storytelling for our people was so simple. And how, on a list of 100 things to do in the first 90 days, how often does that fall down the list? And it's so simple and so beautiful. When does this not work? When's the organisation you walk into, and the Royal Ballet School, and they're like, fantastic, great work with England, but this is a very different thing. When does this not work?
Well, hopefully I haven't got too many media here, but a couple of things. One, the Royal Ballet School, something I really enjoyed about that project was they are the number one ballet school in the world, the rankings, and it's all great. Every person who's graduated there has become a professional dancer since the 1950s. Amazing. It's amazing. But a few years ago, somebody did some research that showed that if you went through the Royal Ballet School or a similar type of school, you're 4 times more likely to have anxiety and depression as an adult than the normal population. So that's an example where you're part of a very beautiful tradition, but when the sun comes on you, you have to ask yourself a question. Do we want to just continue as we are, or does it incumbent upon us to change our trajectory? And they decided that we want to be the number one ranked school, and we want everyone to graduate into a professional job, but that is not success if we know that people come through this experience and are damaged. So they then committed incredibly to a well-being team there, which is phenomenal, world-class now, and they now, their success indicators include people having a better chance than the normal population to have a great life after they leave, rather than being damaged. So that's a good example to me of leadership. Another example, I worked with the British Olympic team before the last Olympics in Tokyo. And what was very interesting was that the Olympians felt like it's a bit about me, me, me. Fair enough too, you're an Olympian, that's fine. But actually, the surveys show that Team GB is the most loved team in this country, also the most diverse team. But I remember being in a forum, not dissimilar to this, and an athlete putting their hand up and asking one of the leaders, who was the first female Team GB Olympian? Because we're talking about our diversity and we're celebrated for it, so who was it? And the leaders literally couldn't answer. And then someone else put their hand up and said, what about our first black Olympian in Team GB? Who was that? And then with a bit of confidence, they said, well, that was Jack London in 1928 because the BBC had written an article. That's not true. It was Harry Edwards in 1920. And I sat there and I thought, I'm not comfortable with this at all. You have got an incredible story. Your people want to be part of something special. You don't even know what the hell it is. In fact, you're giving erroneous information about what it is. So what was interesting, we created a beautiful film and beautiful animation in the Olympic Village. It had all a representation of all of our Olympians from 1896. And the leaders thought, maybe this is a waste of money and time. Why are we doing this? But actually, during the Olympics, the Olympians themselves just took selfies the whole time with these images of those ancestors who they in particular could relate to. Maybe something that shared their own identity story. I think it opened their eyes. So, I mean, that's quite a obvious way of where that when you do that story and you invest in it, people want to be part of it and want to belong to it.
So much. I mean, certainly in my reflections, in the context of All Birds, a story that's come from nothing to something in a small space of time, as we've got a little bit off track, so many of the answers lie in going back to the beginning, to why we started it and what mattered. And there's a simplicity to that that you've drawn out of me, which I greatly appreciate. For everyone sitting in the audience today and they've got competing incentives around margin and earnings calls and Wall Street and just the humdrum of daily life, but they sit here and they say, a sense of belonging is what I want to cultivate. What should they hold in their heads kind of coming out of this conversation?
Well, I would say that I'm in the energy business. I'm in the business of human energy. So if we go back to that 70% of human behaviour is determined by your environment, then we want to create an energetic environment. And this might not sound corny, but it's completely true, is what we actually do in these environments is we start with how can we build a healthy environment? Healthy. We'll do all the fancy performance refinement later. So what's healthy? So it's when you're motivated by a sense of purpose. Okay, so you got your dopamine surging, it's pretty good. You feel connected to the people around you and you can trust them and you see the dignity in them and you know their story. And this is ritualized. That makes us have surge of oxytocin. So rather than being energized by fear of cortisol, we actually motivate and energize people through these more positive hormones of oxytocin and dopamine. So that's where I start with. We are wired to hear the story of us, who we are, and to belong to it. So when we provide that for our people, we energize them, we change their hormonal states. And then, of course, as we've got everyone in that state, then we can really refine on the things we're not clear on and we can get clearer. We can simplify down our game plan from 99 data points to 3. We can do all those beautiful pieces of performance, which I love. But we do it after we've built a healthy environment. Why do we try and build a healthy environment in our families instinctively and then try and help them achieve their full potential and then often take the reverse approach when we're working together? I don't get that.
I'm very fortunate to have you as a friend that kicks me in the butt regularly, and I'm very appreciative of the chance to share some of Owen's wisdom with you. Thank you very much.
The BOF podcast is edited and produced by Emma Clark, Olivia Davies, and Eric Bria.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America NA, copyright 2024.